Well, summer is technically waning around here and fall just on the horizon, but this is the South, so we all know what that means. But the insect world is being readying itself for the upcoming winter and preparing for overwintering. So we thought it another good time for another edition of What's Bugging You, Red River Radio's program about our insect world with Dr. Beverly Burton. She is an associate professor of biology at LSUS and our resident entomologist. This program is made possible tonight by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director for Red River Radio, and tonight we invite you to call in with your questions about our insect world, both the fiendish and the friendly kind, at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And Beverly, thanks for coming back with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Bill.
All right. So now at the during last month's show, there was a question about ants and nesting, and you were going to do a little bit more study on that. So can you tell us what you found?
Well, a couple things. A regular listener over in Texas actually sent me some specimens of those. And she called them pyramid ants, and she was right. She was very correct on that. I don't think I have permission to use her name, but she knows who she is. She sends me specimens a lot. And they're not called pyramid ants because of the shape of their mound. Their mounds are like upside-down pyramids because they're very conical in shape. But if you have a high-powered enough microscope, then you can see that in the area between their abdomen and their thorax is a little structure that looks exactly like a little small 4 to a 3 shaped sided pyramid. And they do have unique habits of building their nest in open, gravelly areas, not so much in the grass like you would find fire ants. And so thank you for the listener for sending me some of the samples, and thank you for the caller that initiated all of this. I did indeed learn something new for myself, which is always a joy for me. And so thank you very much. And I would expect people to start calling 1-800-552-8502. Like to take as many calls tonight as we possibly could. But there is another little insect that's been cropping up that people have been sending me and asking me and talking to me about, and it must be a good year for them. They're called ensign wasp, kind of like a military rank, but it's more like associated with the military flags, because this little wasp actually looks like a teeny tiny little solid black cricket. And but it's not a cricket at all, it's a wasp. And its little abdomen is very flat and kind of raised up on a little stick joined to the body. And it looks like a little flag. And when it's feeding and hunting for food, it kind of waves like a little flag. And so if you see a little black wasp that looks like a cricket, it might be them. But a cool thing about their behavior is that the females are actually extremely beneficial, because they will actually lay an egg inside the egg case of cockroaches. And so they're not parasites, but they're predators of cockroaches. And then the little wasp larvae will eat all of the eggs or all the little baby cockroaches developing. And so they're extremely beneficial. So they're welcome to come into my house anytime, you know. But then again, if they're in your house, it may mean that you have a cockroach problem. And so you kind of have to take, you know, one good sign with another bad sign. But they must be very abundant this year, because I've been getting a lot of inquiries about those. What are these little black things?
Now, that's interesting, because we have, they're not real small, but a group of black wasps that are literally living outside of this building in our awning. There's a lamp up there, you know, a light fixture, and you see them flying up into that all the time. Now, they don't bother any of us. That, you know, they're not aggressive or anything, but they are almost completely black and definitely wasps.
Yeah. You know, most wasps are either parasites, where they develop in another animal because their egg was laid there, or they're predators. There's very, very few wasps that will even associate themselves with plants. of course, other than the bees, which are good pollinators mm-hmm. because they're collecting the nectar as well. And so, but wasps are very interesting itself. And I wouldn't be surprised. This is about the time of year that we start seeing the big cicada killers because they're just, they seem to be active between the time, more active between the time of summer and fall, although they've been here all summer long. So these, of course, are the largest hornets. But again, as Bill said about those other black wasps, they are not aggressive at all. And that's true with most wasps. If you leave them alone, they'll leave you alone. But don't get too close to their nest unless you have one of those cans that shoot 27 feet of insecticide up in the air, and then you can stand back a ways.
Yeah, I don't generally like to mess with wasps, and they don't mess with me, so I just leave them go. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and we'll take your calls right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Any question regarding our insect world, both the fiendish and the friendly kind, are welcome, and we hope you'll call in. In the meantime, we did have some pictures submitted. We didn't get to these last month, so we've decided to hold them over for this month. And the first one is from Jessica Poor, and she is from up in Farmersville, and she submitted this image of a spider, and you can see right next to her hand, if you go ahead and look online to our website, or if you're following on YouTube, Dr. Beverly Burden is holding up the picture right now to the camera. This spider is quite attractive looking. I was wondering what kind this was.
95% of the time when you see a spider that size with a multicolored, either black and white or black and yellow, sometimes even some red in it, it's going to be what we call the aerogope spiders. These are the common garden spiders, and they're extremely beneficial. They're a very important part of both the urban ecosystem and the rural ecosystem. And they are not aggressive either. And so I just leave them alone. They're a beautiful part, and they're just beautiful animals in general.
But if you're somebody who likes to go traipsing in the woods around here, it's very possible that you're going to come face to face with one.
Well, that's why I carry a big stick, Bill.
Okay, there you go.
And I can knock things down in front of me and go ahead and go right through the woods without any problem at all. But they are notorious for building these huge webs.
Oh, yeah.
And they'll set them up at night and take them down in the wee hours of the morning. And that's of course how they capture their food. They're passive predators, so to speak. They let the prey come to them.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, and our phone lines are open, and no phone calls right now, so you can get right in at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Give us a call right now with any question regarding our insect world, both the fiendish and the friendly kind. And we're going to move on to a tiny little ant, it looks like, that Tim Schnell, who is one of our phone volunteers tonight, he submitted this. And this is a little strange creature. The photo's a little bit blurry, but you can get an idea of what this is. Go ahead, Dr. Burden.
Yeah, people see these all the time. And here in the Arklatex area, oftentimes people will call them velvet ants, which is the correct name, but many people will also call them cow killers. And they're not ants at all. They are actually a wingless female wasp. Hmm. They're normally colored in red and black, but sometimes they'll be a little bit more of a yellowish hue to them. Mm-hmm. Please do not mess with these. Two things. They have a very powerful and a very long stinger, and they are very, I'm not going to say aggressive, but they're not doing anybody any harm. The males are winged, and they look very much like the females, and it actually looks like a little velvet. Oh, yes, I remember what else I was going to say. Their exoskeleton is extremely, extremely hard. And so if these are on a soft substrate like a lawn, if you want to step on them, they'll just, when you lift your foot, they'll just keep crawling away. They're very, very sturdy little ants, or wasp, I'm sorry. And very, very common in this area. And one of the reasons they go by the nickname of cow killers is because supposedly the sting of them are so powerful they could kill a cow.
And very, very nasty to humans, though, but very painful, are they not?
I personally don't have any experience, but I do have a friend of mine that was stung one time, and she's tough. She goes, "Eh, it's not so bad." But okay. I've heard other people say very differently.
Right. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton, and you can give us a call now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And we do have our first caller online, and I believe that is Garrett from Nacogdoches. Garrett, you're on with Dr. Burton. What's bugging you tonight?
Hey, how's it going? I'm wondering about these black millipedes that are crawling in our houses.
Yeah, this I'm glad you called, Garrett. This was another topic that I wanted to talk about tonight. Not only the black millipedes, and millipedes are very active this time of the year. They're looking for a place to overwinter, but a lot of different creepy, crawly, squiggly, wiggly things are coming into our houses with this drought that we've had. They're coming in looking for a water source, and I know I've got two ants that I'm seeing in my house right now. One's are a very large black ant, very much akin to a carpenter ant, but I know they're not carpenter ants. And then another very, very, very small ant, probably like the what we call the sugar ant or the Pharaoh ant. And but the millipedes, back to millipedes. Millipedes are scavengers, and they are completely harmless except for one small detail. If you pick them up, since they don't have fangs like centipedes, centipedes have fangs and they have toxin glands, so they are venomous, but millipedes are not. But however, you know, they will have these membranes that that connect their exoskeleton together, kind of like joints, and they can do something that's called joint bleeding, and they can squirt out this most awful smelling oily substance as a defense mechanism. Some people have even claimed that it's bitter tasting to birds or perhaps other predators. Me, I am not one to take things like that on firsthand. I'm not willing to eat foul tasting millipedes. I do promote the concept of what we call entomophagy, which is the eating of insects, because outside of European and North American cultures, the rest of the world does consume insects for nutrition, especially for a protein source. But the thing, you can always tell millipedes from centipedes. I got off target. You can always tell millipedes from centipedes because they're rounder. And when a millipede dies, it will curl up in a circle, kind of like a, not concentric circle, but a spiral circle. And if they were coming into my house, and I do have a problem with these from time to time, I just sweep or vacuum them up, and I know they're harmless, they're a nuisance, and that be that. What do you think about...
I appreciate it.
Yeah, I definitely would not use any insecticide to deal with millipedes. They're not worth it.
Fair enough.
All right, have a good day, and thanks for the call, Garrett.
Thank you.
Other than being an annoyance, do they cause any real harm to your home other than just,
no.
just being ugly and crawling on things?
You know, I suppose if you had a big mass of them and they all started doing this reflex bleeding, then they could stain cloth, carpet, things like that. But that would be extremely rare.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton, and you can give us a call right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We have lines open right now. Nick, please stay on the line because we've got Rodney from Alexandria. Rodney, you're on next with Dr. Burton. What's bugging you tonight?
Thank you. My question is about management of dirt daubers.
Yeah.
I know this is at the end of the summer. You don't see much of them now. However, every summer they come back and they get in everything. What can I do to control the population?
Most of the time, in order to control dirt daubers, you're going to have to just be very vigilant. When they start to build their little mud nest, that's when you want to just run them off. If they're not actually on the nest, take a little hammer, and if nobody's ever done it, take a little hammer and try to crack into a dirt dauber nest, And it's like cement. It's amazingly hard. And what they're doing is they're provisioning these with living spiders and then laying eggs in there so when the eggs hatch, they can eat the living spiders alive. And so I would destroy their nest site as soon as I saw them. If they are constantly at their nest site as they're building it, go ahead and get a broom and just sweep them away. They're not aggressive either, but they can cause some cosmetic concerns, especially if you have a whole bunch of them on your patio wall or on the outside of your home. They're not really structural concerns, but they're just cosmetic concerns. Actually, I think they're kind of cool to watch, and it's because it's just part of the ecosystem. And the fact that certain species will collect certain spiders, I think, is pretty fascinating too. But if you do want to crack those nests open, do not stand underneath them. Because I did that one time, and I had a bunch of spiders falling on my head. I'm not that upset about spiders falling on my head, but it was not a pleasant experience, and I don't recommend it. What have you been trying to do, Rodney?
Really, every year during the summer, they'll return, and I have an open carport, and every now and then I'll store things out there. And, I mean, it doesn't matter, boxes, tools, they just into everything.
Yeah, the other thing, I wouldn't do it, of course, with tools and some boxes, but I've known people to go out there and kind of power wash them off of a wall if they're up on a concrete or a brick wall or even siding, kind of power wash them off, and that's not only gets rid of their nest, but it acts kind of like a deterrent for them as well. They won't come back if they're not having a successful nest building.
Now, do they return annually every year, or do they die after a year? And it's okay.
Yeah, most insects are what we call either univoltine or multivoltine. That describes the number of generations per year, but most insects don't live over a year. Of course, there's always exceptions to the rule. With that, but as far as the mud daubers are concerned, the adults die out at the end of fall, winter, and then it's the newly hatched one in the spring that will return to where they hatched to keep building the nest. Almost like salmon.
I understand. Thank you very much. It's been extremely helpful.
Good luck with that, Rodney. Thanks for the question.
Thank you. Y'all have a good evening.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, and we have a full line of or a full bank of phone calls right now, so we're going to get to each of those. But you can give us a call. Just wait a few minutes at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. I remember in Florida, I just dirt daubers all over my house, and trying to take those things down was no fun. They were just hard-shelled. Little runs of dirt, and I mean, trying to get them off, and then they stained the underneath, you know, of the siding that we had. So anyways, but I suppose they're beneficial too. So all right, we're going to go to our next caller, and I don't have a location, but Nick, you're online with Dr. Burden. Where are you from, and what's bugging you tonight?
Hey, I'm from Longview. Last year we got overrun with army worms here in East Texas, and I don't remember exactly what time it was. I want to say it was around this time. Mm-hmm. Is that something that we might see again this year? And if so, what do we need to do to help prevent them destroying the whole yard?
Yeah, I remember that last year. It was terrible. You'd look out in your yard, and it would just be teeming with these army worms. And there's no predicting which year they're going to be a lot of and which years there's not going to be a lot of them. It's just one of those things. If you could have that kind of predictive power, then everybody that grows crops, especially wheat, would want to know about it as well. But the first thing I would say is be vigilant by watching. And if you see them, go ahead and start to spray a general pyrethrin. If you read the active ingredient of the insecticide, any ingredient that ends with the suffix THRIN will be a pretty good deterrent to these armyworm caterpillars, and so they don't completely eat down your grass to the soil line. And That's all I can tell you. And again, the water thing, you know, I forget about that a lot of times, you know, especially if you would have a power washer, just, you know, you see that. That's what a lot of law enforcement do in these massive riots, like they're having, you know, in Hong Kong and stuff. They just, what are those? Are those called water cannons, Bill? Are you familiar with that term?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and just turn the water on them and flush them back. And that might work a little bit, too. How much damage did you get last year? And was it just on your turf, or were they getting other vegetation, too?
We were actually able to catch it pretty early. My wife noticed them, and then but some of our neighbors didn't, and they weren't able to put granulars out, and they destroyed their whole lawn. So,
you know,
it's nothing but weeds now. So.
Well, they should have put down a post-emergence, for, you know, after that. But the thing about it is that you just have to be constantly watching. It's the same thing, Nick. Everybody goes, well, when are the insects going to take over the world? And my answer is, they already have. They're just allowing us to live here with them on a daily basis, you know. And so I tell my students a lot of times, when people think of the word entomologist, they think of somebody running through a wild meadow with a butterfly net. But, you know, insects can be extremely destructive. They spread diseases. But then you have the beautiful butterflies and the pollinators and the honeybees. And so you can't say all insects are bad, and you can't say all insects are good.
Sure.
And so it's just one of those things. Anything else, Nick?
No, that's it. I appreciate it.
Okay, thanks for calling.
All right, thanks, Nick. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. And we have two calls on hold right now, and lines open at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. I believe we are going next to James from Shreveport. James, what's bugging you tonight?
I had a row of beefsteak tomatoes in my backyard garden, and I was out weeding one day, and I discovered that one of my tomato plants had been eaten by this 4-inch-long caterpillar with slight yellow highlights, but it was a monster. It was three-quarters of an inch thick, and it had already eaten a cluster of three small green tomatoes and four branches off the tomato. It had consumed about a quarter of the plant. I was wondering what that might be.
Yeah. Did it have a little tail on one end?
It was very hard to, yes, and it was very hard to pull off the plant. It had a lot of legs, and they were very strong.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that was, but it if I would have had 10 of them, I might have lost the whole row of tomatoes.
Yeah, I know exactly what those are. They're called tomato hornworms. Mm. And and that little tail in the back is designed to deter birds. They think that's something that they can attack, so they'll attack the tail and not the head of the caterpillar. And caterpillars, when you say it's extremely hard to pull off, let me explain what's going on. If you look underneath, they have two little rows of little legs, and they look like little stubby legs, but on the very end, pointing outward, are these structures that are called crochets, because if you know what a crochet needle looks like, it's hooked on the end.
That's exactly what he looked like, yeah.
And so they can dig in those little hooks, and it's almost, they're stronger than Velcro. It's very hard to pull them off. And you're right, they are voracious feeders. Now, here's the thing. After they get through feeding and they get ready to pupate, they will fall off the plant and burrow into the soil. And if you ever dig these up, they will have a little loop attached to their body. And when they emerge as an adult, that little loop actually becomes their feeding proboscis. And but they look like little brown jugs you could just pour molasses out of. They're very cool looking. Now, the adults are called hawk moths, H-A-W-K, hawk moths.
Hawk moths is what they become, okay.
And those are very, very, one of the strongest and most powerful flyers that we have in the insect kingdom. And what a lot of people do when they have tomato hornworms on their thing, and even though it's hard, just pull them off and drop them in a little pail of soapy water, and that'll take care of them.
Yeah, I luckily only found one. I was pretty scared if there were going to be more of them, because I could wake up in the morning and my whole row of tomatoes would be gone.
Yeah.
I'm glad there was only one. But thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for your call, James. You know, before we go to the next caller, Bill, what I thought maybe James was going to is sometimes early in the spring when people first plant their little tomato plants,
mm-hmm.
They will go out the next morning and it'll look like somebody has a pair of scissors and just cut them right next to
right.
the soil. And those are called cutworms.
Mm.
And those can be a big problem in home gardens as well.
So they're eating our food. They like the delicatessen that we serve.
I guess so.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And we have call lines open right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Not exactly sure where Mike is from, but he's from Louisiana. And Mike, where are you from and what's bugging you tonight?
Well, I'm from a little small town in north central Louisiana called Lilly. It's about 7 miles north of Bernice, Louisiana.
Okay.
And good evening, Dr. Beverly. And the problem I have had recently, about 2 months ago, it started, an insect called a bagworm invaded my shrubbery around my house and almost decimated the whole stand of shrubbery that we have.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you might could help me remedy this situation.
Oh, okay. This is what you're going to have to do. First of all, these little bagworms, what's inside those little bags, and they take, and it's very common in cypress and I can't think of the name of the shrubbery plants, but
Indian hawthorns.
Yes, and they make these little bags. And they crawl around the stem, and they eat as they go, and those little bags are like little sleeping bags. Now, are you talking about bagworms or tent moths?
Well, the we went online, and the description that we come up with was bagworms.
Okay.
They're like a little cocoon.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, that's exactly what I was describing. And like you said cocoon, I said a little sleeping bag, because they do sleep in
right.
there, and they just crawl along and just completely defoliate whatever shrub that they're feeding on. And then they will remain attached to the plant over winter, and then they can emerge in the spring. What, if it's feasible to do so, I would hire the kid next door to yank all of those off my plant and then destroy them. And then before spring comes on, there's something that's called insecticidal oils, and spray them with insecticidal oils. And when they come back to lay the eggs, that will prevent that. And so you can't do anything about it this year except what I call, you know, manual control, which is just picking them off a plant. I know when I was a kid, a lady's bush was just infested with them. And she would give me, of course, this was way back in the 60s. She would give me a dime for every gallon bucket of these things that I could pick off. And that was pretty good money back then. And
right.
so
we have such an infestation there. They were hanging from the seals on our carport.
Oh, my gosh.
The hawthorns are around the edge of the carport, and to pick these off, it would take weeks to get them all off. And I did fight them off with some little success. I got a insecticide and put on there, and they had totally decimated about half of our Indian hawthorns. And I put this insecticide on. I sprayed the entire stand of hawthorns with this insecticide. And it helped. The leaves came back, and they're looking better. But I was kind of wanting to know what to do in the future in case
yeah.
I had this problem again.
Yeah, insecticidal oils is what I would suggest.
Okay.
Do you remember what the insecticide was called, Mike?
No, not it. It was like started with a C-Y, something like that.
Cyfluorithrin. Cyfluorithrin, I bet is what it was. And that's a good pyrethroid. It'll take out most things. So that was a good choice.
I got it at my local feed and seed store. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine, you know, suggested it, and I got it. And it did a number on them, but they're still, you can see the little cocoons all over them. I was watering the plants here about a week ago, and I got to looking, and they're just millions of them.
You know, I don't know if you're a first-time listener or not, but
no, I'm not.
But we really love getting pictures sent to us, so we can put them up on our web page and show them on the YouTube video that we're doing. And if you ever want to do that, and anybody that's listening, send us photographs. As they say, a picture's worth a thousand words. And an infestation like that, I know I have some entomology friends around the country that would love to see something like that too, because it's really not that common, not to have it that heavy of an infestation. It must have been going on for a long time.
Yeah, I've lived here in North Louisiana the better part of 60 years,
yep.
And I've never seen anything like this. And my neighbors are farmers, chicken ranchers and stuff, you know, cattle ranchers and stuff like that, and they've never seen anything like this.
Just so, when you think you got Mother Nature figured out, she throws you a curveball, Mike.
That is very true. Thank you very much, Doctor.
Thank you.
All right, and you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. You can give us calls right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Carolyn and Clinton, please hang on the line. We've got one caller before you, Lisa from Lufkin. You are on with Dr. Burton. What's bugging you tonight?
Hi, good evening. I've got a barn full of a variety of animals, and I'm constantly looking for all natural ways to fight off fleas and ants. And I was told that nematodes might be an option, so I purchased some. I'm just wondering if that's a good idea, if they are harmless to the environment and the animals, and if so, how do I go about spreading those around the barn? They came in sort of a powder, I guess.
Mm-hmm. First of all, let's share with the listening audience what nematodes are. Nematodes are very small, little, what we call roundworms. There's three kinds of worms in the animal kingdom. There are roundworms, like nematodes, something that people might be able to relate to that's a pest on people, are things like pinworms and hookworms. There are also nematodes, but there's also nematodes that attack plants, and there's also nematodes that attack other animals as well. And so those are the roundworms, and then we have the flatworms like tapeworms, and then we have the segmented worms that we like to fish with, the earthworms, and the segmented worms also apply to the leeches. But there are some insects that are very susceptible to nematodes. I would be very suspicious if it might be fleas, because the adult fleas spend most of their life on the body of the animal, whereas the immature flea doesn't. The immature flea doesn't look anything like an adult flea, and it doesn't feed on blood either. It's a scavenger. And so if you have any animals out in the barn that there's a particular spot where they sleep in, I would spread some there. As far as the ants, I don't know of any nematode that's a predator or a parasite on ants, but that doesn't mean there isn't one, because I can't know it all. But I would spread them around the area where the animals might feed or they sleep a lot, wherever they spend a lot of time at. That would be your best bet.
Okay, and so they are harmless, though, to the animals and to the environment in general?
Yeah, nematodes are everywhere. There's good nematodes, there's bad nematodes, but most nematodes are just part of the ecosystem. There are nematodes that eat other nematodes. And
okay.
They are not going to send you any nematodes that are going to be harmful to humans. And they're pretty host specific. Not always. But, you know, there may be cow nematodes versus sheep nematodes and things like that. But they would either be nematodes that would might be harmful to mammals, but you're trying to get the insects, and they send you insect nematodes. And so that's what you would want to, then it's going to be completely safe for the environment because they're out in the environment anyway. We do a little thing here in our one of our biology labs where we can actually, I can send the kids out into the campus and say, bring me back a cup full of soil. I can put it in a special apparatus, and within 45 minutes, we're looking at nematodes that they've captured by the hundreds.
Wow.
People just don't realize how many nematodes are out there, but I have a fondness of nematodes because they're so cool.
Okay.
So good luck with that, Lisa, and thank you for calling.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
And thank you, Lisa. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. You can give us a call now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Clinton, please hang on the line. We've got one caller before you. Carolyn from Marshall, you're up next. What's bugging you tonight?
Red wasps.
Yep, mahogany wasps is what we call them. And they're very active this time of year.
We have put out tons of yellow plastic things with soapy water.
Mm-hmm.
I think you suggested that a couple of years ago.
I have, yeah.
It didn't work.
Do you know where their nest is located? Because they do build nests, and normally they're up high in the eaves of buildings.
Right.
I have a couple nests at my house that I'm having a trouble with because there's just enough space between the roof and the shingles that they're getting up in there. How they're staying up there during the day with it being so hot, I have no idea. But their nest is so protected, I can't get my little spray up in there. And so I'm going to wait until the dead of winter and just go in there and tack those shingles back down.
Oh, okay. Well, Arthur, we have a log cabin with a cedar siding around the roof area, and they're between the cedar and the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And we do is buy the spray that sprays the furthest.
Yeah, 27 feet.
Yep. Is that about our only option? Is there any environmentally friendly?
Well, actually, what you're spraying is environmentally friendly, believe it or not. Because if you read the label, and I talk about this a lot on the show, if you read the label, it'll end in T-H-R-I-N, and that's going to be the suffix. And the reason we like to use, they're called pyrethrins, and the reason we like to use pyrethrins so much is because it has a fast knockdown effect. The moment it hits them, they will just like fall to the ground as if they're instantly dead. Actually, they're still not dead, but they're paralyzed. But they will eventually die because of the insecticide. Now,
that's what's in it.
Yeah. And so what I would do, you're a little bit different than my situation where I can go up there and tack down some of the shingles, but is there a general area that they tend to prefer more than others where they can have a little bit more of a cavity to nest in?
No, because our whole carport is surrounded by that.
Yeah. So tacking up screen door screening isn't going to work for you?
No.
Yeah.
Because that's all open. That's up in the roof area.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's already sealed together. They found holes. And we've sealed the holes of the cedar.
How have you sealed them? Are you using that foam sealer?
Yeah.
Yeah, and are they just chewing right through that?
Yes.
Ugh. The only thing I can think of is next year, just before they have a stronghold. They are in it to win it. They're not giving up the fort. And so what I would suggest for you to do next spring is just be so diligent. And when you just see one or two flying around, knock them down with that spray. And just don't let them get a good foothold into your log cabin. But this year, I would say freezing winter, the cold temperatures that are going to be coming, they're going to be your best friend.
Okay.
Because insects are not very active in cold weather.
That's true.
And don't mess with them. They're not aggressive. But if you start to mess with them, then they'll defend the fort.
But they're just flying around the place, and I have EpiPens for wasps.
Okay. You might want to invest in a good insect net, and there is a company called Bioquip, and you would need to buy an aerial net, and when you sweep them up, you flip it over, and then you can stomp on them. That's a technique that I teach to my master naturalist group, but you can email me, and I can send you some instructions. It's beverly.burden@lsus.edu. beverly.burden@lsus.edu. And okay. There's some other tricks you can do. I really, if you don't want to use insecticide, you know, capture them in a net and squish them. I love that. I know you don't want to get that close to them because of your hyperactive to them. You get your EpiPen. But hire the kid next door.
And my husband knocks him down with a spray, and then he stomps on him.
Good. I'm a full component of stomping. I like stomping.
I just thought there was something else, because like I said, we tried your yellow soapy things, and I
that's just not working
around the house, and it didn't work.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. They always don't work like we want.
I know it.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Burden. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Carolyn.
I'll send you an email. Okay, bye-bye.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And we do have lines open now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Our next caller, I'm not sure where you're from. Clinton, where are you from? And you're on with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you tonight?
I'm from East Texas, and I have a vegetable garden with a tree that had fallen down about a year ago, about 5 foot from it, and yellow jacket set up in it this summer. And for the most part, they've left us alone, but about a month ago, they stung my dad pretty good. And I was just wondering, what's the best way to get rid of them?
Well, if they're held up in a tree, that's the problem. They are in a very stable structure. If it was me, if you can't pull them out, then trap them in. If you know where they're coming and going from, just like I was talking to Carolyn about just a minute ago, get you some nice screen door screen and get your staple gun out there and just trap them inside there and just let them die from the inside.
Okay, we know exactly where they're coming from because we see them coming in and out of a hole at the base of the tree.
Plug that hole up with something, or put some kind of a barrier there that they can't get in and they can't get out.
Yeah, they haven't messed with us too much. Like even the dogs go around them, but my dad got too close, I guess, one time, and they got him.
Is he okay? I hope.
Yeah, his hand swelled up pretty good for about 2 days, but after that, he was fine.
Okay, well that's a good thing then, if there wasn't that much of a tragic aspect to it, but I'd plug that hole or bury.
So it's just to do a barrier type thing across the hole.
Yeah. Now
will it be better to wait till it gets colder?
I do it right now.
Do it right now.
Yeah.
All right.
And
thank you.
Other people would tell you, and of course, Clinton, if you're from East Texas, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Well, just pour some gasoline in there and set it on fire.
That's why I called you, because that's what everybody else told me.
I know it, but that's not always a wise thing, because then you can make almost a tree bomb out of it if it doesn't burn out right. And so, I would go the safer method, but I was just going to see if my gut instinct on the East Texas or just this general geographical area mentality was correct. So,
I've been told that by more than one person.
Yeah. Set it on fire, and if you fry it and put cheese on it, we'll eat it.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Clinton.
All right. Thank you, Clinton. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. We have lines open right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We have a caller that didn't want to go on the air, but they say they saw a black caterpillar in the spring that had red spots between segments along the body, and they want to know what kind of caterpillar that was and what kind of butterfly it would turn into, if a butterfly at all.
Caterpillar identification without a picture is very, very tough. But if it's the one I'm thinking about, it would probably turn into a family of butterflies that's called the brush-footed butterflies. The viceroy is included in one of those, so it could have been a viceroy caterpillar, or there's another one that's called the red admiral, and that might also, especially with the red spots, that might very well be. But they're beautiful butterflies. But one thing that she probably left out is that it was kind of spiky and hairy, and so you want to be really careful with those because they could the spikes can embed into the skin and it could be very painful.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And we're going to go to our next caller, Catherine from Shreveport. You are on with Dr. Burden. Oh, wait a minute. I jumped over, Catherine. Sorry. David from East Texas, you are on with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you?
I'm having trouble with spiders around the house outside, especially on the front porch and back porch, just around the doors and window frames and stuff. I've heard that if I swept the webs down and kept them clean, if they run them out, but it ain't doing no good. So I'm looking for alternatives.
Just the sanitation, like keeping them brushed down. A lot of people will just take the fire hose out there and wash them out. But there is an insecticide that has the compound of bifenthrin, B-I-F-R-I-N-T-H-R-I-N, that works pretty good for spider control. So just read the active ingredient. If it has bifenthrin in it, then you can spray that around the doorway and around the windows, and that should help a little bit. And keep the porch light off because they're attracted to the insects that's attracted to the light.
That's what I say, but my wife's always saying, well, we need to keep it on until we go to bed, and you know, in case somebody comes.
But, all right. Well, I'll leave that between you and your wife.
Well, I say the light needs to stay off because I know it attracts the insects and stuff, and that's what's keeping them around.
Yep.
But that was my problem. So
good luck, David.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And we just jumped over Catherine again accidentally. Catherine, I'm going to go to you next, but on a different line so we can get to you. Catherine, what's bugging you tonight?
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, great, great. I don't have a question or anything like that, Dr. Beverly. I love your show, and I love Cliff's Shackelford show also. I get a joy out of listening to it every evening. But you were about to say something about sending you pictures.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, how can I go about doing that? I have a cool picture of a couple of moths that I would love to send you.
Okay, that would be fine. I would really appreciate that. And I'm going to turn that over to Bill because not only is he a photographer, he runs that part of the website for us. Bill?
Yes, you can send them to me, and my email address is simple. It's W, and then B-E-C-K-E-T-T, W Beckett, at lsus.edu. LSUS for Louisiana State University, Shreveport.edu.
Give me the W Beckett one more time.
Yeah, W Beckett, B-E-C-K-E-T-T.
Got it. At LSUS.edu.
Yes, indeed. And we would love to have them. We love folks to send us pictures because it gives us something to open the program with.
And where are you from, Catherine?
I'm from Shreveport.
Okay, great. You know, there's this moth that showed up about 2-3 weeks ago, and it's a large Cercopia moth, and it was so abundant. Chancellor Larry Clark came into my office one day, and he had taken videos of them with his phone, and so Like I said, love to see those pictures. We'll get them, and they'll be on the next show.
All righty. Well, this particular moth, as a matter of fact, is two of them, and I think they're mating. But the wingspan on them was so large. My sister, she works at Shreve Memorial Library, and she works at one of the command centers right off Burkum. And we were just standing chatting and just kind of looked over at the shrub, and she's like, "What in the world is that?" And I was like, "Oh, my gosh, that's a moth. Let me get my phone. And when I was taking the pictures of it, I didn't realize it was two until a little bit later, but they're it's so pretty and so very interesting to look at. And this moth, when I say it's huge. It's about the span of my hand. And I kind of put my hand next to it so it could be compared. But when I send you these pictures, you're absolutely going to love them because I love them. I had to share them with my daughter in school, but it was just amazing.
When you look at their wings, does it look like they have a little eye spot on them?
Well, the wings were brown, and I don't have a picture up on my phone yet. They were brown, and I think it had little dots on it that may have been leopard-looking dots, but I may be wrong.
Yeah.
I would love to send it to you and let you see it.
If your daughter works at Shreve Memorial Library, there's a good friend of mine that works in the children's section there, and she's also an entomologist. I don't want to say her name on air, but if she checks with somebody in the children's library, there is a trained entomologist that works there.
Okay, then. I will do.
All right.
I will do.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. And we have calls, lines open right now at 800-552-8502. If you get your call in now, we might be able to get you on the air. We are going to go next to James, who is on I-49 driving right now. James, what's bugging you tonight?
Chigger. I bought some property near a lake area, 11 acres. Mostly wooded, about 3 acres is my yard. But I'm beginning to see chiggers on my son's body as they are encroaching. How do I beat these things back?
Could you repeat what is encroaching onto your land? Because I didn't quite pick that up.
Red bugs, chiggers.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. The thing about chiggers, and it's going to be hard on 11 acres of land, James, and that is you got to keep the tall grass mowed down. And you can go ahead, and what I would do, because they are a health problem, I would spray malathion. You can still get it. You can still spray it. And I would keep the grass mowed down. And you don't have to spray the entire place, just around the peripheral edge, just to keep them knocked back. And that should at least keep them at bay. You're never going to completely get 100% chigger-proof, red bug-proof. Yeah, not going to do it. But that's what you can do to kind of make it livable. I know. It's hard.
Well, that's good news, though. And what's the thing again?
Malathion. Yeah. Especially if you go to a co-op or a seed and feed store, they'll know exactly what you need.
Cool. I do appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Good luck with that.
All right. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton, and we've got Mac from El Dorado on next. Mac, what's bugging you tonight?
Oh, I'm being bugged to death. I live in an old building. It's built on a slab of concrete, and the walls are about 3 bricks thick, so it's pretty thick walls. But I'm being invaded with centipedes or millipedes, and I'm not sure how they get in, but I guess through the cracks, but they curl up and die. But I sweep up just because they're crawling up the wall. I just can't get rid of them. I bought a spray that you attach the bottle to the water hose from the feed and seed, sprayed that all around the perimeter of the building. That didn't work, so I got a spray from a lawn and garden center that I sprayed inside and outside. That hasn't worked. I put the first thing I actually did was put quicklime around the outside of the building, but that didn't do it. It seems like they're getting worse and worse.
Wow.
I'm afraid they're going to eat me alive.
And you have no idea how they're getting in. I tell you, if you can see light through a crack, they can get in. So you might try that old trick. And if you spray twice and it's not doing anything, I will tell you that normally they're a very short seasonal pest. And I would be surprised in a couple of weeks if you don't see a significant reduction in them. But I would have to actually come out and survey the site to figure out what's going on. And unfortunately, I can't do that. But just be diligent in sweeping them up. And they're not going to eat you alive because, you know, they don't eat humans. They're scavengers. But still, if they're...
I don't know why they want to come in. Why don't they want to stay outside?
Because they're looking for moisture. It's too...
Oh,
it's,
I see.
I almost said something bad. It's too dry out there. And so they're coming in looking for moisture, and a lot of insects are doing that this type of year. We need some rain here in East Texas and Louisiana, South Arkansas, and everywhere and Oklahoma. We need some rain here in the Arklatex very, very bad.
Would spraying water around the outside of the building, would that help?
I don't think it would, because if the chemicals didn't help, then most chemicals are dissolved in water, then plain water is not going to help either. But but do it and prove me wrong, because I would love for that to happen so you could get some relief.
Yeah. Well, maybe they'll go away soon as the weather changes.
I think they will.
Well,
good luck with that, Mac.
Thank you.
All right, and we got one more caller on the line tonight for our show, and this is Lee from Woodville, Mississippi. Lee, we're running out of time, but quickly state your question, and Dr. Burden, we'll get to that.
No, I don't want to have a question. I just want to tell Dr. Burden that here in southwest Mississippi, we have a bee problem. We lose a lot of bees. So I heard her say viceroy and monarch. Please let the people know that a lot of these insects and these caterpillars and stuff, they are pollinators.
Yeah.
And we need all the pollinators we can get. And thank you, and goodbye.
Well, thank you for that comment, Lee. You're absolutely right. In fact, our show back in August, we actually did about a 10-minute interview with the Louisiana Beekeepers Association. We talked about the importance of pollinators. Now, viceroys and monarchs aren't, some could be pollinators, but normally it's the bees and the beetles and some of the butterflies, and actually some hummingbirds and hummingbird moths are good pollinators. But you're actually right. We have to respect that part of our natural ecosystem, and thank you for that comment, Mr. Lee.
And finally, they didn't want to go online, but from Boyce, a caller asked if millipedes are poisonous in its saliva.
No, they are not poisonous in their saliva. Like I said earlier in the show, they can release a substance from their joints, and it's just very foul-smelling. And you get it on your hands, and it takes a while for it. It's hard to wash it off. It basically has to wear off. And so if you're going to handle millipedes, put on a pair of rubber gloves or, you know, the surgical gloves. A lot of people keep them around the house for cleaning purposes and stuff like that. I would not handle them with my bare skin.
All right. And Dr. Burden, I want to thank you for another great show of What's Bugging You.
My pleasure, Bill.
You have been listening to Dr. Beverly Burden, an associate professor of biology at LSUS and Red River Radio's resident entomologist. We'd like to thank each of you for calling tonight and hope you'll join us next time for another edition of What's Bugging You, made possible by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. Tune in on Tuesday, September 24th, that's next Tuesday, for the next edition of Bird Calls with Cliff Shackelford, and Radio Lab is next. What's Bugging You is produced by Bill Beckett and Dr. Beverly Burden, with assistance from Wally Derleth, Sheila Lawrence, and Tim Schnell. I've been your host tonight, Bill Beckett, and this is Red River Radio, and we are your voice of the community and your community-supported public broadcasting service from LSUS.